Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by REO Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again here with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, happy spring. You must be excited with the nice weather coming, getting out on your bike.
Well, it can't come soon enough, of course, but yeah, I've managed to be out a few times. You know, you got to bundle up a little bit more than you'd like to, but it's nice to be back out on the road again and feeling the warm weather. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Well, you've talked to me about, you know, when you get out on your bike and you talk about that Zen time.
Absolutely.
I used to get that from martial arts. Of course, I've retired from martial arts. And recently, I have a friend named Matt, and shout out to his wife, Nikki, because I wanted to get back into running. And she wrote me a Couch to 5K 9-week program that I recently started. I'm in week 2. And I'm starting to get that Zen time as I'm running, getting into the zone. So I know what you're talking about now, and I'm happy to find something again. I know you're not crazy about running, but that's what I'm into now. Anyway, joining us today, I'm really excited, is Rob Barlow. Rob is a successful telco growth executive and the CEO of Six Harmonics, a manufacturer of edge computer and mobile routing platform for industry, a board director of various AI/ML, you'll have to explain that one to me, Rob, and IT small cap companies. He is the founder of International Telecom Network Operator, Wire IE. Prior to this, Rob worked at ClearNet and TELUS in Canada, delivering large-scale network projects. Rob has successfully raised over $70 million in funding and was a venture partner with the group Ventures. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hey, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Rob, let's start at the beginning. I want to dive into a little more about your history and who you are, but why don't we start at the top? Can you tell us a little bit about your company?
Yeah, so Six Harmonics is a manufacturer of hardware and software, which is based in Ottawa. We are a boutique firm that has got a couple products. We have a legacy product, which is digital divide based using what's called the TV white space spectrum. We also have a very extremely ruggedized router that actually has an AI engine with edge compute that is going to be used and is in beta right now with some of the larger mining companies in Canada to help them deliver their product more efficiently and cost effectively. And so there's a big movement going on in critical metals and mining, nickel, cobalt being one, to do more with less. And so we actually have a very good team. My team is it. They are building this product with a large partner who helps us. And we are going down the path of making Canada one of the best at operationalizing and increasing performance of how they extract metals through technology at the very edge. When I say at the very edge, I mean on the rock drillers that are down 10,000 feet and at the end of a drift that's 20 miles long all around the world. So we have a software that allows us to control all the computing power on these big machines, as well as we actually have the platform that allows third parties to collect data, third party also being the customer.
I'm always amazed. We've done 100 yesterday, episode 179 came out. So we're approaching 200. So that's 200 conversations that we've had with people from all aspects of business and life. And they all have interesting stories. But I'm always curious, you know, here you are talking about something that I've never experienced in mining and all these things and even the software side. How do you end up there? Like, tell us about your career journey. Where did you start and how did you end up where you are today?
Well, I think one of the key things is I've always had a big blocks in my mind. So I've never really been someone who writes down, I write down day to day things I want to do for the next day and things like that, just to keep the anxiety level down. But I've always been big blocks. Here's our goals in the next 5 years for myself and even for our own businesses that I've founded. So I came from Northern Ontario. I was in a small high school. I went to grade 13. My father says he went to extend his studies in stupidity. And I was like, well, like for grade 13, I guess so. Maybe that's why they got rid of it. I went to university for a week because they went on strike after a week. And then I decided, well, maybe I'll just go fishing and figure out what I wanted to do. But I always wanted to be a leader. So I kind of always followed that path. I ended up working as a tradesman for Ontario Hydro, where I learned grassroots leadership and being involved at the age of 19 years old, driving heavy equipment and working live line on 115 kilovolt lines and driving swamp tractors and working with helicopters, building out lakes in Northern Ontario to bring them power. You are around people who are grassroots leaders and you're also become one. And so that gave me, the baseline to actually take my skills there around relationships and people at all different levels of life, and then to look at technology. So I always had been somebody who was very interested in technology. When I was a kid, I used to buy these kits to build AM, FM radios and bought a ham radio that had tubes and fixed it up. And so I always wanted to be in that game. And what happened was I had moved to Halliburton and was on a lake. And this guy came up and to my shoreline and says, hey, we have the same last name. And I was like, oh, okay. So I met this guy from out of nowhere and became friends with him. And then about a week later, he's like, you talk about communications and there's this new company called ClearNet. They have like cell phones. You should look into that. And so I did. And when I was a lineman, everything was by paper. Like we were on two-way radios in the middle of nowhere. We would phone an operator to actually let us work on the line. And there was no computers. It was all paper. So we had been going through a big reorganization. That was a long time ago. It was like in the 90s. And I decided to leave. I made the leap. I actually got a job on contract with ClearNet, which was just a startup, and took a job in IT. I knew nothing about computers. I went to college at night.
Did you stay for more than 1 week this time?
Yeah.
Did you go on strike again?
No, they didn't. No. I went in Excel and the whole bit. But there's one thing I had that they liked was that I wasn't afraid to lead people. And also, I wasn't afraid to take on stuff I didn't know about and learn about it as I was going. And of course, I got paid commensurate because of my skill set. It wasn't like, I was walking in asking for a lot more money. I took a significant pay cut to learn. And so I became, throughout the years there, because it was a startup, I took on stuff that nobody else wanted. Everybody else was afraid of their jobs. I was like, well, no one's going to get maimed or injured or killed in this career. And so I'm not afraid to take those on. So I ended up doing things like building data centers. All new technology ended up going through me. I had the R&D lab and then Telespotus. So Telespotus, and then I learned all about, I'd say, pseudo government, publicly traded company that's changing. ClearNet was purchased by Telus for $7 billion. And then I actually worked there for 2 or 3 years. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do this myself. Nortel had gone into bankruptcy. There was all these opportunities for services, building networks. We focused on the Caribbean and Latin America to start. I hired a bunch of ex-Nortel guys. I created a company. I left Telus. And 12 years later, I had pivoted twice, ended up building a network for rural and remote across Canada, focusing on accounts with Telus, Bell, and looking after their government contracts. So I ended up building a network that was service level driven, like you couldn't drop a packet. The RCMP was our end customer. Telus was the provider of that network, and we were supplier to it. So I did that for 12 years. It was hard to find money. So I actually was kicking the can down the road for 12 years, trying to find money to build infrastructure. Eventually, we got to a point where there was a lot of debt and not enough to keep up. And our working capital partner ran into financial difficulties, and we ended up selling the company. It was about a year and a half before COVID. And then I got a phone call from the founder of ClearNet. So all this time, I'd been working on networking, having a network, getting advice from people who know, learning all the time, focusing on leadership. And so he asked me, he says, you know, do you want to be involved in this company, Six Harmonics? And I said, no, it's hard to raise money. It's like COVID. I just tried to help my friend at the Group Ventures. He was working on AI projects and it's hard. But I eventually liked the product. I liked the idea. This digital divide, it's always been kind of like somewhere I wanted to go. I've always had a focus on unleashing the potential using technology. So I actually took on the role. I revisited the whole strategy team. And fortunately for me, some of the people that were out in the industry that were very intelligent product people, architects, hardware and software engineers, had just got purchased by an American company and they didn't want to go work for them. So I was able to attract those people, and also their ideas came with them. And I'm fortunate enough that people like to work for me. In my past company, they had been actually suppliers of mine. So here we are. We have a product that people actually helped us build. They want us to hurry up and they want to buy it. And we're not fast enough for it. That's a good problem to have. So that's my story. I mean, people first, and business is done based on relationships, and I'm always willing to learn. So
I know Al wants to jump in, but just before you do, I heard something that I really liked, and I'm going to steal it because I'm going to be writing that down. Unleash the potential. Did you mean that in the context of technology or in people? Because my head went right away to people, because I was telling Al, I use a planner and every week, it's a weekly planner, and every week I write the word amplify, because that's my theme for Q1 and going into Q2. But I love, now that we're building a team as well, because we just hired another person, I love that unleash the potential. And I was just wondering, how did you mean it?
So I meant it by people first, because if you have a good team and you're asking the right questions, you can build anything. It literally can build anything. There's nothing you can't build. Like, technology is never the problem. What the problem is, getting people to write a check, getting people to actually say, oh, there's value here, and having good people that can actually bring that together, like have intimacy with customers, understand what their problems are, explain it, take technology and explain it correctly, know how to solve issues when there are issues, and keep everybody engaged. I mean, engagement is like a very corporate way of saying having people who want to work in an environment because they understand the why they're there. So part of the thing about me is that people first, making sure that everybody understands why they're there. Everybody needs to have a reason. So currently, if I look back, the reason I was at ClearNet was because of the culture. We were solving a problem. People were communicating. I came from an industry where we were doing everything by paper and it was two-way radio. And some people got hurt, seriously hurt, and it was a delay to get help to them. So for me, it's always been the why, and technology can help us get there, but you need people first. So that's been my whole strategy.
I love it. Yeah, it's great.
If you treat people with respect and listen, I mean, listening is the biggest skill a person needs. Like, I mean, it's the hardest skill to develop, and it's the hardest skill to keep, and it's the hardest skill to keep up with. And so if people work in an environment where they're not afraid to say, push back to the CEO, that's a good thing. I mean, conflict is good. Solves a lot of problems. It's that whole thing about just having the right people, and trust is earned, and being sincere and where you're at. I find it's kind of lacking, and it's changing though. Like, one point I'd like to say, it's kind of a rabbit hole, but it's something that's very important today, is that today Canada's got a productivity problem, but it also had 50% more entrepreneurs 10 years ago than it does now. And there's a reason. And the reason is we don't focus on the why for companies. We focus on return all the time. There needs to be a balance. And so I've been told, and I'm proud of this, oh, you're a growth guy. And I'm like, oh, great. But it comes from people who aren't growth people. They're return people. But if we are going to actually have good companies, it needs to be a balance. People need to know why. And the investors also need to be there because of the why. I'm not alone. There's a lot of people like me there. But the ones you hear about are perhaps not like that. So it's interesting. It's a good question.
You actually started to answer what I was going to ask you about with that very last part about, you know, the why. You've been in the technology world for a long time. You mentioned that your product is not just leading edge, but leading edge. Like it's, yep, it's right out there and it's worldwide. And I recently had the opportunity to go down to the Board of Trade dinner in Toronto, and I was exposed to some other leading edge technology companies there that were making. So my question is around that very thing. Like, what would you say is the current environment for companies like yourselves, entrepreneurs, people who want to be at that leading edge? And you mentioned how hard it is to raise money. Like, is this a good time, a lousy time, tough? What are your thoughts around that?
Globally, there is not enough money. There's not enough money at all. There's people who have a lot of money that are holding on to their money. Since 2022, it's been very difficult for people to raise money, not just raise money, to have the financial tools they need to succeed, any company. So what you're seeing is people just bouncing along, like delaying things, laying people off. There's a whole side of the, which you don't hear, it's the shadow market. People are just laying people off. There's a lot of one guy out there talking, but you think there's 10 people behind them, but it's still one guy. There's a lot of people trying to generate, you know, there was just an announcement yesterday for a $2 billion AI fund. And the success of that will be yet to be seen. But it's a big problem. Globally, there's not enough money to go around. It's affecting us all. When was the last time you really heard about a big IPO on Wall Street like that people knew about? It's very few. So people are just tight holding on to their money. Like a lot of people lost a lot of money in COVID. Private companies are hard to invest in. And the people who do invest in them are investing for a why reason. They know it creates jobs. They know it helps the economy, but they're few and far between. I'm fortunate we have a true angels. Like people who are truly believe in that, but they're few and far between, and they can only take the ball so far. What's happening is, here's an example. I just applied for a $1 million federal government loan. It was a low interest loan. They told me there's 10 times the submissions that they usually get. That tells you that there is a problem, because the volume of need is huge. And one of the venture funds that I just talked to, it's very large and it's been around a long time. They told me that since 2022, 90% of the venture funds have been only investing in existing portfolio companies to keep them alive. Because if you think about it, and we're Canada, we're very small, like to actually even attract US money, we need to ask for way more, but you can't ask for something you can't use, right? So it's a bit of a challenge. I'd say it's going to get better before it gets worse, because the market really is at the valley of death. Like there's only one way out. You keep crawling. And companies that start in environments like this or change in environments like this are going to grow with the economy. It's not going to be like this forever. But right now, it's super tough. I hear from CEOs, entrepreneurs, they're all saying the same thing. People are saying, well, you're not asking for enough money. You know, you should be asking for 20 million. And the guy's like, well, I need like five. And then I'll kick the can down the road and then I'll ask for 20. But they're like, well, I don't see how you get to five. Can you buy a bunch of companies? It's like financial engineering to get stuff done, which truly is can be done. It's a strategy. A lot of corporate companies have a lot of money. So they're trying to invest in companies that they see growth with, potentially. A lot of family offices have money that they're trying to figure out, well, how do we socially invest more? But there's a lot of people knocking on their doors. So the goalposts have moved. Used to be like, hey, show up with a PowerPoint and someone's like, here's a check. Now it's like, do you have a paying customer? Then I'll write you a check. Those goalposts have moved a lot. So it's tough. It's a tough market. It's really tough for Canadian companies. But if you believe in what you're doing, and a lot of people do, they're very passionate. And if you're flexible and nimble and you know that you have to go backwards sometimes to go ahead, and in business, every day is a new day.
Perfect. Okay. So I appreciate that. And that's some good insight. So let's get back to your company a little bit and your world. Like, tell me a little bit about what you've got on the horizon. What are you most excited about for your company?
Well, I'm really excited that we have very good relationships with some large IT companies. They're helping us open doors. We're really excited about that. We are actually involved in helping modernize mines. So the mining industry in Canada, 75% of all head offices in the mining industry are in Canada. It's a very large market. I don't know if you saw in the Wall Street Journal, they're talking about copper mines. Well, think of it. NVIDIA's valuation is how much? And the copper mine that produces the copper for NVIDIA is at an all-time low. So NVIDIA is not successful if they don't have copper or nickel or anything or these critical metals. So, and I'm not sure about this stat. Someone will probably comment like it's not true, but I did hear that if one copper mine and a large copper mine shuts down, there's only a 7-day supply in the world of copper. So we are excited about the fact that we can help bring us to the next revolution, which is AI, because AI needs chips. We are excited about mining, the whole ESG side of it. Like, mines are going deeper and deeper with no people. And so we are building a product that is going to be on those machines. With there's not going to be people on them. So eventually, you know, you're going to have electric vehicle underground going down to the depths where it's not safe for people to work. Our product is going to be there. There's going to be less people required, less costs required. Like, as an example, some of these mines spend 40% of their operating costs on ventilation to ventilate diesel fumes. So this whole electrification, we're part of that growth. But it's just getting our voice out there, getting people to understand the value we're adding and getting them behind us. And we do have a lot of support. Like, we just opened up an office in Sudbury. I mean, I was raised in Northern Ontario, so I'm really happy about that. And I do have a lot of connections in the mining world. And I have a team that has a lot of connections. But it's really about resource extraction and doing things differently. So as an example, I mean, we're focused on mining because it's really valuable. The why is there, but there's also other things like ports. I mean, having electric cranes to help with the supply chain uses our product. There's lots of things we can do. Once you start to understand the endpoint, understand where their work's actually happening. And it's a great product to work with other companies that are trying to do the same thing. So it's really like the product ecosystem, because there's software, there's billions. Like, someone told me there's $290 billion of addressable market in software as a service, but there's no place to put the software. And it's not on the device. I mean, if it is, there's 10 pieces of equipment on one truck and the guy who's running it is kicking them and trying to get them off once you're on. Like, these machines stop, it costs money, like lots of money. So yeah, it's a really exciting space. I mean, they're having a problem with people working in the resource extraction industry. Like, they think it's dirty. Well, you know what? If you look at it, it's not dirty like it used to be. It's actually becoming cleaner and cleaner than it has ever been. I mean, these mines are like cities. They produce their own hydroelectric. They're looking for small module reactors now, which are huge. They're using technology in a big way. They're just getting onto it because they're forced to. So that's what really excites me. And we're Canada. If you're going to be innovative, shouldn't you be innovative in resource extraction?
Great point.
Well, Rob, we've been chatting about, you know, business and entrepreneurial journeys. And I remember the days, and Al will probably remember because Al was head of finance at the time, and him coming to the partners many times in our early years saying, well, we paid the staff, but there's nothing left for us. And I remember going home and having that conversation with my wife and just really felt very stressed and wanted to pull my hair out. And luckily, there have always been things in my life. Now it's shifted a little bit now that I've retired from martial arts, But there's always been stuff in my life, whether it's podcasting or reading or exercise of some form, to handle the stress of growing a company. Because I don't care who you are, there is several ups and downs in that entrepreneurial journey. What's your particular thing that you do to manage that stress to make sure, hey, I'm going to show up as my best self every week or every day, whatever it happens to be?
Yeah, I try to keep physically fit. I do yoga, maybe it's 10 minutes, but I still do it. I try to keep to a schedule as much as I can, but traveling is hard to do that. Like, you got to put a little time in for yourself when you travel for business. I'm a road cyclist, a mountain biker, a downhill skier.
I knew I liked you.
Yeah.
And all right, I'll just leave the rest up to you guys from here. Yeah. Go for it.
Yeah. I always think about, I love what I do and I love the people I work with, but am I going to regret not taking this trip? And I have no problem working when I take a trip. So as an example, if I go to Vancouver, which I am in May, I'm going to bring my road bike. I'm going to get up in the morning at 4 a.m., 4:30, have a coffee, some porridge, and go do 4 laps around Stanley Park.
Nice.
Like, you have to actually build it into your life. I've been successful at doing that, but I've also made it a priority. And then I also know that it's not a life or death.
Yeah.
In this, my whole goal is to build a product that actually saves people's lives. If you know what's going on underground on a machine and something gets too close to it, you can identify it and save people's lives. So I always have perspective on what's really important. And it's really making sure that I don't get too pulled into that whole building something. It's like an artist. If you go build and paint something, and you think it's finished, then you go and you're like, oh, I just gonna make that little tweak, and it ruins the painting. So you have to balance things.
It's important. And I think it's important, especially for young entrepreneurs to hear, because I remember when I was younger, I felt like, a lot of the times, if it wasn't done by me and handled by me personally, then, everything would go wrong. And you slowly begin to realize, the world is not going to end, especially if you've built a good team.
Right.
World will not end if I'm out of communication for a week. And Al's very good at this. When he goes on vacation, he shuts off. And you did respond a couple of times because we had a new employee join and we had some questions. But that was a rare case. And I even apologized to Al. I said, sorry for bugging you, because I don't want to bother people. But it's true, having that realization that for most of us, it's not life or death. The world is not going to end if we take some time for ourselves. And I'm sure, because you were talking about your team and your people first, I'm sure you extend that out to your team as well, which is what we try to do here as well. If I send you an email on a weekend, which I try not to do anymore because now you can program it right with Outlook to show up on Monday morning. But I said, I have zero expectation of you showing up. Now, me, I love Sundays for doing a lot of office prep. No one forces me to do that. But again, I think you're right, Rob. You've got to just find that time of making sure, and I love the idea of taking your bike to Vancouver, by the way. That's amazing. But finding that time just for yourself and realizing, hey, the world will continue on. And if I show up less stressed, I'm probably going to be a better version of myself anyway. So that's great. We have arrived at, quite honestly, this has been my favorite part of the podcast where we wrap up. And I cannot recall if we let you know this question in advance. So it is Al's signature question. It's a little more philosophical. We'll throw it at you. It's up to you if you want to answer, how you answer. It doesn't have to be business related. It can be anything you want. But I have a feeling you'd have an answer on this. So Al, I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, I've already seen some clues as to maybe what the answer will be. But yeah, so here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
Oh, well, I'm fortunate enough to have two wonderful children. I consider the seeds of my work. So literally, I guess, too, if you want to be funny about it. But I made sure my kids had the opportunity to get the education they wanted and also to make sure that they have access to any of the knowledge I have. And so they're both doing great things. They believe in creating value in this world and making the world a better place. Yeah, so that's one of the things. And I also take the opportunity to meet with other people who are like-minded so we can talk about things and, make sure that I'm surrounded by people that are inspiring as well, which inspires me to plant more seeds.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you sharing that and really appreciate your input that you've given us. You've given me some great ideas and got the gears turning as we've been going through this conversation.
Yeah, agreed. And I've said it too many times. People are going to get sick of hearing it. But I mean, the podcast, this has been a platform where we've been introduced, and Rob, we'll talk about this after, who else do you know? Because what we're finding is when we have a conversation, we meet someone like you, we get along really well right from the first call that we had in preparation for this, and then we just get introductions to other great people. And it just reinforces, and I have to go back in my notes and give credit to someone who introduced us, because this has been a great conversation, and it just reinforces really great people know other really great people. So I really enjoyed this, much to agree with Al. But thank you for joining us today, and thanks so much for sharing your story. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at your company?
100% use LinkedIn. I'm always on LinkedIn.
Sounds good. Well, that does it for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. Al and I certainly did. I hope you can tell. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or rejoin the conversation on LinkedIn. And always remember, success leaves clues, my friends.